Welcome back, everyone. I am Cass Pianci, and I'm here as usual with my partner in crime, Mr. Bennett Tomlin. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well, Cass. How are you?
I'm doing good. We're jumbling around a little bit today. There's a lot going on, but I think we've decided that today it would be best if we talk about Solana and the wormhole bridge problem that happened this past week. So why don't you introduce everyone to exactly what happened in case they weren't paying attention to the hundreds of millions of dollars in Ethereum that vanished?
Yeah. First, crypto is an absurd industry in which hundreds of millions of dollars can get hacked, ranking as one of the largest thefts of all time. And people are just like, huh, yeah, I guess that happened. let's back up, actually. Wormhole is a cross-chain intermediary that allows people to move assets from one blockchain to another. Recently, someone discovered a bug on the Solana side of this that allowed them to mint 120,000 wrapped Ether. So these are Ether on the Solana blockchain. The attacker was then able to bridge 80,000 of those back to Ethereum and withdraw from Wormhole, gaining access to 80,000 Ethereum and using the other 40,000 to trade against various things on Solana. Yeah, so that's the hack that occurred. Several hours after this occurred, people on Twitter started to notice it happened. And then Ceridus, the company behind Wormhole, used their deployer to post a message telling the hacker that if they gave back the hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Ethereum, then they would give them $10 million.
And how did that work out?
Well, I don't think the hacker gave it back. My understanding is that Jump Crypto, one of the larger venture capital firms in the crypto arena, which was spun off recently from Jump, the major commodities trading firm in Chicago, decided instead to bail out Certus and Wormhole because they had acquired it last August and they have pretty incredible exposure to the Solana ecosystem as a whole.
And we previously talked about Jump Crypto, I think, in the episode with David Kanellis. You can hear us talk about the Tether papers. And in the Tether papers, Jump is named as one of the major minters of Tethers.
Yeah. At the time, they were 99% of all Tethers on Solana or something like that.
Which it wouldn't surprise me if that was still true. I haven't looked at how many Tethers are on Solana these days, but I don't think it's gone up much since that report has come out. And if it has, Jump would have the war chest to be the ones getting that much Solana. That's a lot of money, though. $360 million in Ethereum is just so much money.
It's an absurd amount of money.
Yeah. And so to make that decision to bail them out almost instantly, I mean, that decision happened not within 24 hours. I think that happened within 12 hours of this hack, something like that.
Something, yeah. Yeah, like within half a day, somehow Jump had gotten together 120,000 Ethereum from somewhere, maybe from their own war chest. Maybe they're taking out major loans from other institutional desks and over-the-counter trading desks and were able to replace the stolen Ethereum in the protocol. And in doing so, helped prevent cascading liquidations across the Solana DeFi ecosystem, which really gets into why they did it, right? Because...
Well, that was going to be my next question, which is so it had to be worth it for them to bail this out for such a massive amount of money so quickly. This is, even for a major cryptocurrency trading desk, $325 million worth of Ethereum is hard to come up with that quickly, or if it is easy to come up with, should still give you pause about spending it. But it doesn't seem like it gave them much pause at all. So why is this so important?
Jump Crypto is one of the largest liquidity providers in the Solana ecosystem, across Serum, Mango Markets. They're investors in Pith Networks. They obviously own Certus, the wormhole bridge onto Solana, and they have pretty incredible exposure to the Solana ecosystem as a whole. And so my understanding of what likely occurred is that Jump Crypto did the math and realized that $300 million was less than what they would lose letting the market react to all the wrapped ether, or that much wrapped ether on Solana now being unbacked. They expected to get liquidated across the protocols or to lose too much in other things they were exposed to, and so filled the gap and protected their investment.
And you bring up wrapped Ethereum. This is also, there's wrapped Bitcoin, there's wrapped, I mean, there's all kinds of wrapped tokens out there, in case anyone is wondering and they're unfamiliar with these concepts. The idea is that you would, let's say, if you have a bunch of Ethereum and you would prefer to trade, let's say you have one Bitcoin as well, you'd prefer to trade that one Bitcoin on Ethereum-based markets as opposed to Bitcoin against whatever. You want to trade it as a wrapped Bitcoin on Ethereum chain. What you would essentially do is take that one Bitcoin and more or less like stake it, right? Stake it on this wrapped Ethereum protocol. Say like, okay, so this one Bitcoin that I have is now substituted on this wrapped protocol. Is that right?
Yeah, largely. Bitcoin's a little bit different. Any of these cross-chain things get a little bit different because each chain is different. So wrapped Bitcoin, you deposit to a certain Bitcoin address and then get to a certain Ethereum address your wrapped Bitcoin, right? For this one, you deposit your Ethereum in Certus's One Bridge, you get the wrapped Ether, which can then go over to Solana. And so you're depositing your token in these smart contracts. And that's really what the bug that happened here was, is there was a smart contract bug on the Solana side that enabled additional minting of the wrapped Ether token that results from that bridge.
And what you're suggesting is that there's all these trades happening with these wrapped tokens and that the...
Well, and not just trades.
Okay.
More importantly, it ends up used as collateral, right? In all these different lending protocols or the various DeFi protocols. Like, think about like MakerDAO, right? Foundationally, it's a lending protocol. You're putting up collateral and getting a loan denominated in DAI, right? And this idea expands much beyond Maker in the DeFi ecosystem. Abracadabra, the one we talked about that involved Sifu and Patrin, is same basic idea as MakerDAO, but instead the collateral was why earn USDT rather than Ether? And so there's a whole bunch of protocols over on Solana that were using wrapped Ether as collateral, and that the value of that wrapped Ether suddenly effectively plummeted because it was no longer backed by the expected amount of Ether on the Ethereum side of the contract. And so it's kind of like a stablecoin DPEG when one of these wrapped assets gets hacked like this.
The market didn't really react that way, though, if I'm recalling correctly. Like, people were a little bit concerned that there might be some issues with these wrapped Ethereum. But then it's almost like the market knew that Jump was going to come in and just fully back this thing.
Yes. This was strange watching from the sidelines for this. And maybe there was more stuff for people deep in the Solana ecosystem that I missed just because where I was sitting on Twitter. But from what I could tell, it took several hours for people to even realize the hack occurred. And then afterwards, you're right, wrapped Ether only traded at a very slight discount. And so my assumption there is even if the market did not necessarily expect Jump Crypto to step in, that Jump itself had decided it was worthwhile to maintain the value of wrapped Ether until a decision was made or whatever. And so if they're the major liquidity provider, this major market maker with tons of cash on hand, for them, providing the liquidity at a certain price point can be maintained for a period while they decide what they want to do. And so that's what I think was happening in those hours immediately after the hack. Jump kept trading wrapped Ether as if it was fully backed. And meanwhile, they were in communications internally and with their company, Certus One, to decide what was the best course of action.
This brings us to another interesting point, which is that Ethereum, I guess, co-founder Vitalik Buterin recently did a post like a week before this all happened where he was suggesting that cross-chain stuff, bridges, these bridges for moving assets between cryptocurrencies is not the future, and that this would open the ecosystem up to issues. These bridges would present so many new problems that there's no way they could be reliably secure. So weird timing, not suggesting anything nefarious. I think everyone's just kind of like, wow, that is intense. And there is obviously a big swath of the community, whether it's Jump Crypto or other, you know, big names in cryptocurrency that believe cross-chain is the future of cryptocurrency, of decentralized finance. Can we talk about why people think it is the future, but also why there are all these new security issues that just present so many problems?
Sure. It was quite interesting timing from Vitalik. What's interesting about this, though, is that this was not a bridge-specific hack, right? Like, this was a smart contract bug, and it's the type of smart contract bug that a variety of smart contracts could have. And so this specific example really speaks more to the difficulties in producing immutable censorship-resistant code, right? Designing software, it is very common for there to be bugs, but in DeFi and in crypto as a whole, the cost for any bug whatsoever is extraordinarily high. I think Vitalik was getting at that does apply here, is that anytime you're trying to construct across different chains with different security assumptions, different differences at all, you are vastly increasing the complexity of your application. No matter how simple the thing you're trying to do across chain is, doing it on two chains instead of one is likely to make your code an order of magnitude more complex. And so, while this was a smart contract bug, which could have occurred in non-bridge things, it's also true that the very process of designing a bridge is a process that, like designing any complex piece of software, it is extraordinarily difficult to do without bugs. Now, you asked another question there, which is why are some of these people in crypto so interested in this multi-chain cross, in this cross-chain future, right? And I'm not sure why. Because my initial instinct is that one of the, and we talked about this a little bit with Oliver when he was on here, one of the driving things for cryptocurrency adoption is the network effect. You get more liquidity on one chain, more activity on one chain, and it helps bring more liquidity and activity onto that chain. Fracturing that cross-chain seems less advantageous. However, there are differences between the chains, right? It's a lot cheaper to transact on Solana than Ethereum. And so it might just be that there's certain trading activities which are easier to do on the decentralized exchanges like Serum or Mango Markets instead of something like Uniswap. And so by wrapping and bridging it over, these firms are able to better execute their tactics. Or it could just be, and this would be the more VC-like claim, that not every application requires the same set of security assumptions. And so for certain applications that do not require a certain level of decentralization, censorship resistance, or security, it may be cheaper to bridge the valuable asset from that chain over to another chain and do the interactions with it in the less secure but cheaper place. I find most of the cross-chain arguments pretty unconvincing, but I'm pretty skeptical, just in general.
It does seem like a lot of it is venture capitalists and hedge funds that are very keen on this. That usually means that there's a cost basis for their interest. Clearly, the cost basis for Jump Crypto is far greater than $325 million to support this cross-chain bridge. It's also so funny to me because we had Daniel Goldman on, who works on Arbitrum, which is a layer two solution for transactions on Ethereum. I have my own skeptical issues with layer twos in general, which is that you're there's so many steps involved already once you've gotten to layer two that hoping most people will be able to understand it at all is a big ask. But I'm sure people said that about the internet too, right? I'm sure there's comparisons people could make that would be apt and fair. But it's so funny that there's these cross-chain solutions that are being sponsored essentially by giant trading firms and venture capitalists. And then there's Arbitrum and Lightning, which are also supported by VC funds and stuff, but don't seem to get the same kind of attention or traction. It doesn't, I don't know if it's just like the ability to monetize them, or I don't know why these are less focused on, or if they've failed. Like, I think Lightning is generally considered a failure of a network at this point, but I guess that'll be up for debate and people will probably tell me how wrong I am. I guess it's being used in El Salvador, right? I don't know.
I can tell you why. Because VCs got into Solana early at a really cheap price and get to benefit from the price appreciation of Solana itself. Arbitrum, as Daniel made clear when he was on our podcast, does not have a token. And so, yeah, VCs invested in the company behind it and have equity stakes in that company. But that's somewhat harder to get exit liquidity on. And it is less clear that value Arbitrum as a protocol derives will accumulate to that company. And so, and this speaks to one of the troubling things for me about Solana is that so much of the ecosystem seems deeply centralized. And we've seen this when the validators have had issues and we've had to watch them coordinate to try to figure out how to reboot the network. We've seen this with the huge amounts of VC money which got funneled into Solana and how much they control. We see evidence in it in the fact that Jump Crypto is willing to blow $300 million to help protect the value of it because they get nervous. And we saw it when the Tether papers came out, and we saw that Jump was responsible for basically all the Tether on Solana. There is still a lot of protocols in crypto and in DeFi that claim decentralization but have these huge vectors of centralization inherent in them.
Which we've discussed this also. I feel like we've discussed the idea that, like, you know, for some solutions, centralization just makes sense and that's not an issue. But then why bother having a blockchain with seven validators or what, like, why bother? Why bother playing pretend anymore at that point? It just seems like so strange to me. And I guess that goes to the idea that there's these buzzwords. There's decentralization and blockchain, cryptocurrency, tokens.
And there's rich people who profit when the price goes up.
Yeah, but getting those rich people involved in your project to begin with requires you to utilize these buzzwords in general, right? Like we see that with when we talked about BitClout, which is now DeSo, decentralized social media, so stupid. But we've seen this time and time again where they feign decentralization and feign all these hip crypto words when in reality it's just a giant cash grab. I know you and I have friends who are like very bullish on Solana still, I think. I wouldn't doubt that the VCs could fund that thing to the moon. They probably can. It's not our project, so I could see them just going as hard as they have to make it work, and that's fine. It just sucks that money doesn't go to maybe some more interesting projects that could benefit more people, which I think may exist in the space somewhere.
I certainly think there's more interesting projects out there. Perhaps the more troubling implication to me is that if these major firms like Jump, who have such massive exposure to Solana that they will immediately deploy $750 million to protect it, that's potentially pretty massive war chests for lobbying, for political donations, and for efforts to ensure that these firms that have benefited from the growth of these protocols can continue to benefit.
I don't think anyone's doubting that there's a giant push right now from the cryptocurrency industry to lobby the hell out of U.S. Congress and propose the idea that if we don't just let all this stuff happen, we're going to get left behind. Which, fine, the oil industry also does that. And a lot of horrible industries do equally terrible things and get Congress to back them. So that's fine, you know, whatever. We've talked about a lot of things that I don't have any issue with when it comes to crypto. It doesn't bother me that it's gambling. It doesn't bother me that it's speculation. A lot of this I don't take issue with at all. And I really don't take issue with people wanting to gamble and wanting to speculate. All of that's fine. It harkens back to that episode we did with David, the Tether Papers, where even if you feel like the information gleaned from the Tether Papers is just so basic or something, I think the important takeaway becomes like, look at who's trading against you. And they are trading against you. This is Jump backing this protocol at this rate because they think it's going to save them more money to do that than if they let the market actually react normally to it. And that means they're trading against retail. They're trading against retail. That's who they're trading against. That's who all of these people are trading against. They're in it, so you lose. And if you know that going in, if you know that you're playing against the casino and you're probably going to lose, I think it's a much safer bet for everybody involved.
Yeah, exactly. These firms are not your friend. The goal of all of these firms, Cumberland, Alameda, Three Arrows Capital, Jump, they exist to make money. And the way they make money in zero-sum environments is by someone else losing it. And they hope you're that someone. Not you in particular, but you as like a category.
Yeah.
Not them.
Hopefully that explains this to the best degree that we can. I think everyone should just be aware, you know, that these guys have very, very obvious intentions, and helping you is not one of them. We're going to see how this plays out. We're going to see what happens with Wormhole. This isn't going to be decided this week or next week or in a month even, probably. Like, this is something that will play out over, who knows, even years. And maybe these people who believe in cross-chain bridges, or maybe they are right. You never know. But I'll tell you, the past few weeks with this magic internet money stuff and this Wormhole thing, it feels like for the first time in a while, it's not even regulators or Congress coming after the cryptocurrency space. It's just the cryptocurrency space. It's like that meme where the guy is riding the bicycle and then he takes a stick and just shoves it in his front wheel. That's what I think is happening in decentralized finance and cryptocurrency right now. And then they're like falling on the floor, bleeding, and they're like, damn you, government. And you're like, man.
Yeah, the government is the one who induced you to invest in the protocol called Magic Internet Money.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's going to do it for us this week. We have some really fun news coming out next week, and I'm getting amped and excited. I can't share more than that, but I know for a fact that next week we have some big news coming out, and I'm very, very excited for it, and I look forward to sharing it with you guys soon. Stay tuned.
If you enjoyed this episode, we would really appreciate it if you shared it with a friend you thought could enjoy it or left a rating and a review. Both of those things are the things that help us grow this podcast, and we truly appreciate your support. Thank you.